Thanks for joining in here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, turning our attention to mass timber. It's engineered, load-bearing wood. It's emerging as a building material alternative to steel and concrete. And you can find it in buildings right here in Wisconsin, as a matter of fact. The latest mass timber project is called the Edison. It's in Milwaukee. It's an apartment building that will be completed by 2027, and it will be the tallest mass timber building in the U.S. Larry Mueller here talking today about it. It's sustainable architecture, really. And Alex Timmer is our guest. He's an associate professor of architecture and urban planning at UW-Milwaukee. And as we talk with Alex, I want to hear from you. Join in with your questions about mass timber or other sustainable models for architecture. Let us know your ideas for kinds of buildings you'd like to see in your town or city. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Alex Timmer, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to talk about mass timber.
What does it mean if a building is a mass timber building?
So we would typically classify mass timber building as something that's predominantly made with engineered lumber. So we have effectively two major types. We have CLT, which is cross-laminated timber. And think about this like plywood, but it's constructed out of 2x6s of spruce, pine, or fir. The other type is glulam. Glulam is, in contrast to CLT, where the layers of wood that you're gluing together all go in the same direction. So we typically see CLT as floor plates, roofs, walls, all load-bearing.
Yeah.
And then glulam as beams and columns.
So it makes it much different, I guess, from the more popular building materials.
Well, I think it's for us here, it's a relatively new technology. And so we're seeing both the need for like the industry to sort of get behind it in terms of the number of factories we have and these types of things. But it's a really compelling material, both from its environmental, it's constructed or let's say fabricated out of a renewable resource, out of something that we grow here in Wisconsin, for example. In Wisconsin, I believe the number is around 20% of our forests are spruce, pine, fir, the mm-hmm. types of wood that can readily be used in CLT. And we have a lot more hardwoods. And so there's some question about, can we leverage our hardwood for this as well? That's not something that has been sort of standardized or codified quite yet. But it's a material that is great because it can be fabricated offsite. So because you're fabricating a panel, let's say a floor in a factory using CNCs, using routers to cut it out, you can pre-plan every hole, where every piece of plumbing needs to go, where every piece of electrical needs to go. And so that really reduces on-site construction time. It reduces on-site waste. It allows you to be constructing basically related parts of a building at the same time, because a lot of it's happening in a factory offsite. So
a dry factory. A dry factory.
Yes. In a controlled environment that's dry, you're not having to deal with the weather and those types of things. Other benefits of it's light. I mean, it's relatively light. Building materials are heavy generally, but it's relatively light. And what you see with mass timber buildings is actually a reduction in the concrete foundations, because the timber is lighter to a comparable concrete or steel building.
It's pretty cool. What are some examples of mass timber buildings maybe here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk the most notable ones right now are the Ascent and the Edison. And the Ascent, until the Edison is complete, is the tallest hybrid mass timber building. So because it is a concrete core and the rest of the building is made out of that timber product. Until the Edison gets built, which I believe will be 31 stories, sort of topping out over the Ascent. So it's really fascinating to see here in Milwaukee, two of the tallest mass timber buildings in the world, one after another. It's a really special thing for the building industry here. And it's made possible, I think, really because of the support happening at both the state level and from developers and the architects and the engineers. Like, everybody kind of has to get together on this, because until very recently, it was an exception in the building code to do a mass timber building that tall. You see a lot of other, Wisconsin has 40 either constructed or in construction mass timber buildings, 15 in the design stage at the moment. And the vast majority of those buildings are between 1 and 4 stories. So we're talking about relatively low rise buildings. And that's really what makes the Ascent and the Edison these really sort of compelling outliers, because they show what we can do.
So I remember I was reading a piece on the Ascent, and the builder was talking about, I forget how, he said normally we'd use about 40 people to build this under normal construction, but this was, we I think it was 15 or 18 people is all it took.
Yeah, it's a big part of being able to pre-manufacture the components of the building means that a lot of the coordination happens ahead of time. Meaning if you have somebody fabricating a floor plate in a factory ahead of time, like, you have to be coordinating with the engineers, you have to be coordinating with the plumbers ahead of time, and then it all gets cut out. And think of them as they're like they're components. They assemble in a very specific way, and they have all of their connection plates pre-assembled. So it literally comes to the site. It needs to be put in place and either bolted. So maybe something that's important to mention is a lot of times with mass timber, you see a steel connection plates between the components, or you will. So you're bringing in a CLT panel, for example, to the site, setting it where it needs to be, and either welding it or bolting it in place through a connection plate that's like placed in the CLT. So when it comes to the site, it's kind of ready to go. You set it in place and keep moving.
Kind of like the process, kind of like a prefab house, you know, that we've had.
It's very similar. The difference is you're not bringing in, at least in the Wisconsin context, we haven't seen any projects in which they're manufacturing like an entire room. In Europe, there are some examples of like an entire room being built in the factory and being set down like a cell and basically literally like stacking boxes. We haven't seen that yet, particularly in the example of the Ascent, that's post and beam with CLT floor plates on top of that.
And it's beautiful. You know, the you mentioned Europe, and mass timber buildings are more common in European countries, if I'm not mistaken. What are the challenges to building with mass timber in the U.S.?
So the biggest challenge, as with anything, there are multiple sort of variables that you have to contend with. The first variable is the building code. And until, I believe, on September 1st, Wisconsin will be adopting or beginning the process of adopting the 2021 IBC, which means International Building Code, and IECC, which means International Energy Code, that we'll be adopting and sort of onboarding those. What's really important about that is it has built into it a subsection specifically about mass timber. So before that adoption, we were working on the 2015 code, a lot of the mass timber buildings had to work on exceptions through the building department. So that's super important, because that then clears the way for developers to take a risk on a product, on a construction technique that's not super common, because they can avoid having to deal with the sort of additional timeline of getting exceptions to the building code. And then what we're seeing, which is really exciting, and I think if you look at the number of buildings, we're on this kind of exponential curve, because every time we build a mass timber building here, we develop expertise. And that expertise then makes it that much easier for the next engineer, architect, or whoever to build the next one. So we've hopefully in September, we're kind of past that kind of, let's say, the building code side of things. And then we get into the question of sourcing material and fabricating it. So I got to remember this number correctly. In like the Great Lakes Basin, I think you could argue as of 2023, we had 4 plants that would make mass timber. We have one in Wisconsin here, I'm blanking on the name, but they specialize in glulam, right? So they're not doing CLT, they're primarily doing glulam. And so as we're starting to see the sort of, let's say the legislative side of things make it easier for developers to do this, we're starting to see the need and desire for producing more and more of this product here in the United States, which is great because it means more jobs and more factories, and we become more of an expert on these things.
Yeah.
The next thing then is the sourcing of the material and making sure that you're pulling from forests in a sustainable manner, whether it's FSC or if it's SFI or PE, these different certifications that make sure that you're managing the forest sustainably where you're pulling these materials from. Otherwise, you do run the risk of effectively having even though it's a great material and it's ecologically great, but it could have a negative impact if we're not sustainably managing the way that we pull that material from the environment around it, the way we extract it. So I think it's those three things, and it's really exciting to see the legislative part of it happen, and we're seeing more and more of these projects come on board.
I'm telling you, I look at that Ascent building, and it is beautiful, gorgeous building, and it's 280 feet tall. I mean, that's getting up there, and the Edison's going to be taller. They're both apartment buildings. What are the are there risks to building so high with wood?
Well, I think the biggest thing that comes up is the question of fire, and the way in which wood is a combustible material, and the building code deals with it by dividing, let's say, mass timber building into three subtypes. Technically four, but we'll talk through A, B, and C. And each of these subtypes, type 4A, 4B, and 4C, limit the height of a building and then require a certain amount of protection for the wood. So when you look at, say, a type 4A building, which is the tallest that that these buildings are, those buildings have to encapsulate or cover with non-combustible materials, typically drywall, for example, the timber so that it doesn't start on fire. When you get to 4C, these are lower buildings, four stories, in that kind of range, you can completely expose all of the timber. And the way in which engineers and the scientists that have been doing the sort of testing to develop this, what they do is they actually oversize a beam. So if you have a mass timber beam, you oversize the beam. And when it burns, it chars. It's called the char layer on the outside. And once it chars, it actually protects the wood on the inside of the beam. So yes, it could burn, but structurally it's sound because of that char layer effectively protecting the sort of inner portion of the beam that's actually been sized for the structure as it's required. I think that when you look at the Ascent, like I mentioned, it's a hybrid building. I don't remember the exact numbers. I believe it's somewhere around 20% of the timber is exposed in the units itself. And then when you start to move from the unit to the egress, meaning the exit hallways and the stairways, we're suddenly starting to see more and more drywall. And that's twofold. What it does is it makes sure that, like, when you leave your apartment, you have a sort of protected pathway all the way to the egress, and also so that firefighters have that protected pathway. And so the stair cores are concrete, and the podium or the base of the building is also concrete. So it's not a kind of one size fits all. And I think every use type, site and size of building requires sort of different conditions, but that's kind of how that sprays. So like the more you expose, the smaller the building needs to be.
Yeah. Alex Timmer, our guest today, Associate Professor of Architecture and Urban Planning at UW-Milwaukee, as we talk about mass timber construction with him. Join in. Questions 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at mass timber building in the state with our guest from the UW-Milwaukee Department of Architecture and Urban Planning, Alex Timmer. He's an associate professor there. Join in. Questions 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. Here we've got a little longer email, but I think it's worth reading from Ethan. His master's thesis was focused around looking at outlets for small diameter timber in Wisconsin. One of these outlets was CLT. He loves the idea of CLT. Wish it to become reality here. The biggest issue that very few of our trees are appropriate for use in CLT. The two timber species which contribute a majority of the overall growth in Wisconsin are white pine and red oak. White pine's a little weak to use in any form of mass timber by itself. Red oak is too dense to glue and heavy. Another consideration is that all other timber grown in the state has strong markets for other uses. CLT seems infeasible in Wisconsin due to current market condition, and he doesn't understand how it's more carbon friendly if we're shipping in the building from Europe as we did for the Ascent building in Milwaukee. So his question then is, what efforts are being taken to adopt CLT industry in Wisconsin? Since as it stands today, the forest products industry has yet to break into the CLT market within the Lake States. He would like to see the mass timber industry in Wisconsin grow.
It is a challenge, and I think that the species part of it is a good question. Like I mentioned before, the sort of suitable species only make up about 20% of our forests, the vast majority, or at least the last number that I was looking at. And so there is a question of having to do the testing to kind of expand those things. I will say that the work of the DSPS, the Department of the Professional Services, to get the 2021 building code through and approved was to directly address some of the things that your email was asking. Basically recognizing that there's a kind of chicken or egg problem here, which is like we need the demand to build the buildings, and then we need to be able to open up a factory. To a little bit of backstory, a lot of those conversations that happened around that were actually around the same time as the closing of some of the paper mills. Historically, Wisconsin, what's really interesting about Wisconsin is we have in Wisconsin the first patent for a glulam timber product, which was patented out of Peshtigo. And I believe the building that they used to build that in is still up there. So it's the challenge. It's so multifaceted. And I think the work of the DSPS in Madison has at least recognized that there are certain levers that are certain things that they need to help with get out of the way. So the question about this is sort of sustainability question of it. Transport is a huge, he's absolutely right. The if you're shipping even by ship or rail, which are relatively low impact, but from Europe, you are lessening the sort of environmental benefit of a renewable resource because you're burning fossil fuels to get that here. To expand a little bit on that as well, the question of what happens to these buildings when we're done using them is really important relative to the environmental question. If we just take these buildings down and if they're burned or disposed of in a way that basically re-releases all of the sort of environmental benefit at the end of their life, we basically offset any good that we might have caused. So it's a challenge because we need certain dominoes to fall. I'm really excited to see the building code come up in to 2021 from 2015. I'm hoping that we'll start to see some of these other things sort of fall in place, like the industry coming here. And again, we do have, there are four or five plants here. So it's not that the industry doesn't exist. It's that the industry doesn't exist in a way to support the construction of a 31-story mass timber building.
Yeah. Well, this whole sustainability option, I mean, these buildings would be stored, and you kind of mentioned it in passing, these buildings would store tremendous amounts of carbon and...
Correct.
And would reduce fossil energy needed for construction over concrete, let's say, or steel or aluminum?
Yeah, I think so. The one of the most promising things about wood is this: it's sequestration of what they refer to as biogenic carbon. So basically, as the tree is growing, it is absorbing carbon from the atmosphere, and storing it in its structure. And the benefit of that from a carbon cycle standpoint is you basically slow down the re-emittance of carbon into the environment. So that's the question of end of life. End of life for a building, it becomes really important because if you just re-release that through burning or whatever, however we dispose of these buildings, all of that carbon that you've been storing and kind of holding back gets re-released. So you're absolutely right. I think anything that's biogenic, anything that is like naturally grown, it's that the promise there is that you're basically slowing down the carbon cycle or sort of pulling back some of that carbon from that cycle rather than re-emitting it right away. It still takes, you know, energy to make these things. You have to harvest the wood. It has to Sure. go to the mill. Then it has to go to the CNC, to the CLT factory, which is another, you know, type of mill. So there is still a lot of, let's say on the back end, on the producing side, energy used. But it is important to compare it to the other materials. One of the things we always talk about with our students is, you know, certain materials do certain things really well. Right. Like timber, we don't really want to get wet. Right. That causes sort of weathering mm-hmm. and wearing issues, certain, you know, versus things like concrete do really well with that. And so I think the important thing and what I think is really exciting about the Ascent building as an example is as much of that building that could be mass timber was. Right. Like maximize the sort of best possible use, maximizes the environmental impact.
You know, as you mentioned students, you think about architecture, it's more than just designing builds. It's knowing the codes, the politics, business and the supply chain, also thinking about how buildings affect communities and people's moods, also mm-hmm. sustainability. How do you prepare your students for this kind of work?
Architecture is, it's a delightful mess. I mean, it really is. It's so, but maybe a bit of a pitch for architecture as a career, it's because you have to tap into all of these things, because you have to be aware of the implications of any one design choice that could be social or economic or environmental, you kind of have to be a generalist in everything and kind of dip your toe into a lot of different things. So through the education here, obviously we do focus on specific materials. And we do teach the students about building code and about the sort of environmental impact and the social impacts and like how all of these things are connected. Every project is unique and what is going to be the most important sort of lever in that instance is different. And so it's the messiness of it is, I think also speaks to the impact that architecture has. Every one of us right now is sitting inside of a building, presumably, engages with buildings every day. It's a sort of an ever-present thing that as designers, you have to understand that the shape of your building impacts more. The choice, so something as simple as choosing how wide a space is will impact the span of a beam, which impacts the depth of the beam, which impacts the amount of material that you need to use and potentially impacts the specific material that you might choose. So it's definitely, we do our best to try and get them prepared to ask the right questions.
Well, and you have a lot of students?
Yeah, we are, the UWM is one of the, what they refer to as the extra large schools. Yeah. In the whole nation. I believe there's only five or six in the entire nation accredited architecture programs that are as big as us. So we pride ourselves on that. We see ourselves as really wanting to make sure that we're broadening access to this as a profession because it is so impactful.
Yeah, well, this is fascinating. I hope people go online and just look up that Ascent building in Milwaukee to get a view of what it can look like and do. And Alex, you're doing some good work there. Thank you so much for talking with us today. I really appreciate it. Maybe we'll do this again. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Appreciate it. Alex Timmer, Associate Professor of Architecture and Urban Planning at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Great to have him with us today. Quick mention, tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll hear how to save your water-soaked garden, and we'll talk about native plants as well. Thanks for joining us today. This and all our shows are a team effort. Clara Neipert, Joel Patnaud, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, all of our staff, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Again, thanks for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.